It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
The Supremes back in business. Good afternoon. It's the first Monday in October, and that marks the start of the fall term for the U.S. Supreme Court. Correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The Supreme Court begins the term with its first in-person oral argument since the pandemic began. Its docket includes cases dealing with religion, gun rights, and abortion.
The abortion case before the court could unravel Roe v. Wade.
Roe v. Wade is definitely on the chopping block for the first time in 30 years.
Legal analyst Pete Williams, Jen Crawford continues our coverage.
And there are other contentious cases that surely will divide the justices. In November, the court takes up a major gun rights case challenging a New York law that limits who can carry a concealed weapon for self-defense. It also will decide a religious rights case, whether a tuition assistance program in Maine that bans state money from going to religious schools amounts to discrimination.
As mentioned earlier, today marks the first time the justices are all together in the same courtroom since March of 2020, when COVID shut down the country. A big battle brewing on Capitol Hill over President Biden's Build Back Better plan. Reporter Laura Podesta says the Democratic Party is in disarray over the spending bills.
Progressives say they're willing to lower the $3.5 trillion price tag, but want to keep in their policies on climate change, child care, and more.
Fully fund what we can fully fund, but maybe instead of doing it for 10 years, you fully fund it for 5 years.
More conservative members of the party, like Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, have taken issue with the cost.
Republicans argue the far left has hijacked much-needed infrastructure improvement projects. Wyoming Senator John Barrasso.
Now you have this big government socialism reckless spending bill being basically used to hold hostage the things that the American people want, are roads and bridges. Now we're at a point where the president is weak, and really, the far left Democrats are driving the bus, and Joe Biden is just along for the ride.
House Speaker Pelosi promises a vote on the $3.5 trillion Build Back Better plan by the end of October. Pandemic point man Dr. Anthony Fauci is causing controversy with his latest comments about COVID-19.
This is not driven by immigrants. This is the problem within our country.
Last week, the Department of Homeland Security said 20% of the illegal immigrants crossing the southern border are sick. Fauci also warning against making plans to gather with family for Christmas this year, saying it's just too soon to tell if that's safe to do. Well, critics argue human traffickers are taking advantage of lax immigration policies from the White House. Jonathan Swan is with Axios.
This is only getting worse. Some of it is inducement from the Biden administration policies and traffickers using that to message to people in the region, come on up.
Last week, the Biden administration announced it will seek deportations only for illegals deemed to be a national security threat. New COVID vaccine mandate took effect today for teachers in New York City. Unvaccinated educators will not be allowed in the classroom. Mayor Bill de Blasio.
We will move to put them on leave without pay. And at some point, of course, if it's never resolved, that does lead to termination, but it doesn't happen immediately. What happens is people don't get a paycheck.
The teachers union warns the vax rule will cause chaos in the classroom.
We were the heroes last year. Now they want to get rid of us.
But this teacher here calls the edict unfair.
I just don't understand why I could go in for 3 weeks and now I'm a public health threat.
A similar vaccine mandate for teachers takes effect next week in L.A. Troubled waters off the coast of Southern California.
We are in the midst of a potential ecological disaster.
A massive oil spill threatening wildlife there. Correspondent Matt Piper.
It's so bad that the beaches in Newport Beach and Huntington Beach are closed, and authorities are urging people to avoid the areas. The oil slick in the Pacific Ocean is believed to have originated from a pipeline leak, pouring 126,000 gallons into the coastal waters. Orange County Supervisor Katrina Foley says it's killing animals underwater.
We do have reports of dead animals along the shore, washing up upon the shore.
The plume is some 6 miles along the coast.
That pipeline pipeline breach sent oil pouring into the Pacific, killing fish, contaminating wetlands, and closing beaches. Reporter Lulia Luciano has the latest.
The good news is we've learned that the leak has been stopped. The bad news is all around here, all along the shore, you see these balls of tar. It smells dizzying. It smells like you're in the middle of a gas station.
The faceless Facebook whistleblower has revealed herself. She is 37-year-old Frances Haugen. She says she was the one who leaked documents alleging that Facebook lied to the American people about its attempts to curb misinformation. Haugen also accuses the social media site of routinely choosing profits over public safety.
The thing I saw at Facebook over and over again was there were conflicts of interest between what was good for the public and what was good for Facebook. And Facebook over and over again chose to optimize for its own interests.
She says Facebook has known for years how damaging its content can be for teens.
Facebook has realized that if they change the algorithm to be safer, people will spend less time on the site, they'll make less money.
Haugen adds that Facebook is not just dangerous for teenagers, it is distinctly worse for teenagers than other forms of social media. Well, it took the final game of the regular season to sort it out, but the playoff picture is complete now for Major League Baseball. Here's how the Bronx Bombers got into the postseason.
Line drive. Here comes Wade. Here's the throw. He's safe. And the Yankees walk off into the postseason.
The Yankees and Red Sox do battle tomorrow night at Fenway in the American League wild card game. The other wild card matchup pits the St. Louis Cardinals against the defending champion LA Dodgers on Wednesday. The winner of that game gets to take on the team with the best record in baseball this year, the San Francisco Giants. A homecoming of sorts last night in Foxborough, Massachusetts, as the legendary Tom Brady took on his old team, the New England Patriots, and the fans who cheered him on there for several years.
Tom brought six Super Bowls. You absolutely applaud the GOAT, whatever he does.
Brady was able to engineer another win for his defending Super Bowl champion team, Tampa Bay. The 44-year-old says Florida may be his home now, but New England always will hold a special place in his heart.
I had the best memories. My kids were born here. You know, it's just a great town. It's a great city. It's a great area. I love it up here. You know, I have so many people that I have relationships with. But, you know, this was about this team coming up here to win. This wasn't about one player. This was about our entire team to go on the road and beat a good team.
Brady passed Drew Brees for tops on the all-time passing yards list and became just the fourth quarterback ever to beat all other 32 teams in the league. And still to come on the Noon Report, the Farmer's Almanac is out, and we'll get you caught up on the fall and winter forecast. Hochul is holding out hope that the vax rule will be upheld. And how does this happen? We'll talk about the Northern Tier home that was hit by two trucks in just one day.
Well, good afternoon to all. It's been a bit of a murky Monday across our region, and we're going to be stuck in some soggy air for another 24 hours or so. I'll be back with forecast details in 10 minutes.
All right, we'll look for you then. Thanks, Kevin. Rochester, New York Mayor Lovely Warren in court today answering to felony charges that could land her behind bars if convicted. Warren's accused of campaign finance abuses during her 2017 mayoral run. New York Governor Kathy Hochul expressing confidence that the courts will ultimately overturn the religious exemption rule for health care workers who remain opposed to the COVID shot.
So people are realizing they're coming up on a deadline, especially those who thought they're going to get a religious exemption, which I do not believe will be upheld in court.
Nurses, doctors, and hospital staff have been told to get the jab or lose their job. Alyssa Downey is a registered nurse from Syracuse.
I'm obviously very disappointed with this mandate. I think it's going to put a lot of healthcare workers at risk, a lot of patients especially at risk. When you become a nurse, it becomes part of your identity, and this is being stripped from us.
Downey says last year, essential workers like herself were hailed as heroes, and this year they're being vilified for refusing the vaccine. Two federal judges have blocked the state from enforcing the vax rule, but those orders expire in mid-October. The deadline's come and gone for Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf to comply with a subpoena from Senate Republicans. They're pursuing what the GOP calls a forensic investigation of last year's presidential election. Attorney General Josh Shapiro calls the subpoena request an abuse of power Republicans are seeking data on 9 million registered voters in the Commonwealth. The work stoppage continues at Mercy Hospital in Buffalo. Nurses and doctors have been on strike for 4 days now due to a contract dispute.
It is ridiculous. Get in the room and start talking to us.
Corey Gambini is president of the Healthcare Workers Union.
There is only one way for this strike to end and get the legitimate, real caregivers back to the bedside. And that's for them to come to the bargaining table and start discussions and get this done.
2,000 hospital employees have been off the job since early Friday of last week. New York State Police are still trying to figure out what sparked a house fire and explosion in Allegheny County over the weekend. That blast happened on County Route 18 in the town of Alma. Near the Pennsylvania border, a body was found in a residence after first responders arrived on scene. Well, the Farmer's Almanac is out, and this is a yearly prediction about the long-range forecast.
As the days get shorter, of course, we get reminded that this is why we live up north here. We enjoy the season.
So what's in store for the rest of this year?
November is going to be about 5 degrees below normal for an average of 39 degrees. Look for flurries on Thanksgiving.
Farmer's Almanac spokesperson Janice Stillman.
December will be about 4 degrees below normal, which amounts to about 32 degrees for the month. Look for a white Christmas with very frigid temperatures on that day.
Stillman predicting a cold, a wet, and a white winter coming up. People get ready. Well, how does this happen? In a span of less than 24 hours, two trucks crashed into the same home in separate incidents in Bradford County, Pennsylvania.
My husband and I both were just like, no way. I'm like, there's no way this is happening again.
The police didn't even believe us when we called in the second one.
It happened in the town of Athens, not far from the New York border. The first collision occurred early Saturday when a white truck slammed into that home.
There was a truck just backing out of her dining room that had gone through the wall into her home.
And then early Sunday, it happened again. Another white truck crashed into that same home. What are the odds? The house that was hit twice has a lot of history behind it, too. It was part of the Underground Railroad system during the Civil War. Some weird stuff there in Athens, Pennsylvania. Hey, the two-minute drill next. It's sports. It's sunny time.
Yeah, Bob, let's start with the final game to the regular season in baseball. Blue Jays beat up on the Orioles 12-4 to climb a half game behind the Yankees and Red Sox for the American League wild card. First, the Yankees hosting the Rays. Scoreless game, bottom of the ninth.
Line drive. Here comes Wade. Here's the throw. He's safe. And the Yankees walk off into the postseason.
Yankees are in. Then Boston trailed the Nationals 5-1, but rallied to tie it at 5. When Rafael Devers did this in the ninth inning.
There's a shot. That one driven to center field. Backing up. It's gone. Home run.
Boston takes a 7-5 lead, and that would be your game winner. Yankees play in Boston for a one-game playoff tomorrow. Toronto's season is over. To the NFL, the Bills pound the Texans 40-0, but Sean McDermott said could have been more.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the first half, we were, 0-3 in the red zone?
To New Orleans, Giants-Saints overtime, man.
First and goal from the New Orleans 6 as Barkley takes it to the goal line. He's in. Giants win in overtime.
Giants win 27-21. Overtime in East Rutherford. Jets lead the Titans 27-24. Tennessee from 49 yards out to tie it.
On its way.
Jets win. Ben Roethlisberger threw his career 400th touchdown. Not enough. Steelers fall to the Packers 27-17. Mike Tomlin.
Disappointing outcome, but it's nothing mystical about it. You know, like I just told the team, man, we need more detail in our play. We got to put them in better position to make plays.
Chiefs big over the Eagles 42-30. Nick Sirianni.
The self-inflicted wounds have to stop. And I know I sound the same, but it's still true. We got to stop the self-inflicted wounds.
And the Browns knocked down Kirk Cousins' last chance pass in the end zone to beat the Vikings 14-7. Kevin Stefanski.
Kirk Cousins, who's outstanding, was 6-for-6 on that first drive, and I think 14-32 the rest of the way. And so to be able to defend the pass like the guys did and have their rushing coverage operating like they were, I thought was outstanding.
For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphia.
All right, Sonny, thank you very much. And still to come on the Noon Report for a Monday, the Supreme Court is back in business. We'll tell you what's on the docket. Vax rules in school. It's the subject of today's Issues in Education feature report. And what's it like to run a marathon? We'll hear from two first-timers coming up.
Of all the places that Christianity has had an incredible impact through education, India
is at the top of the list. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In the 19th century, India was coming to grips with the modern world. British companies like the East India Company aided in modernizing India through trade. And British missionaries like William Carey aided in modernizing India through transforming culture. Arguably, among the most creative interaction with the West and Christianity happened in the region of Bengal. For example, when Krishna Mohan Banerjee was a child, he attended the school society institution started by a man named David Hare. He was a watchmaker from Scotland. Though Hare's faith commitments are unknown, he was concerned about social welfare in Bengal and had started several important schools in the region. Hare recognized Banerjee's potential and pushed him to continue his education. First in Patalganga, and eventually at the newly founded Hindu College, which is now known as Presidency University in Calcutta. Banerjee thrived at Hindu College and was profoundly influenced there, especially by the headmaster, Henry Louise Vivian DeRosio, as an atheist who advocated for free discussion and debate on any and every issue. When his father died of cholera in 1828, Banerjee was forced to support himself through manual labor, and yet he still excelled in his studies. After graduating from Hindu College in 1829, Banerjee got a job teaching at another of David Hare's schools. It was also in 1829 when Scottish missionary Dr. Alexander Duff noticed that Christian missions in India had only reached the lower castes. Duff proposed a new mission strategy, offering education in English, in the sciences, and in biblical studies. The goal was to help upper caste Hindu students see the contradictions in their own beliefs and move toward Christianity. Banerjee not only began to attend Duff's lectures, he even visited Duff's house for serious discussions about religion and philosophy. In 1832, Banerjee converted to Christianity. Hare fired Banerjee from his school. Banerjee's wife was forced to return to her father's home, and a firestorm erupted in the local press about Hindu College. Banerjee moved on to the Church Missionary Society School, where he served as headmaster there. He studied theology at Bishop's College and became the first Indian ordained as a priest in the Anglican Church in Bengal. Soon, Banerjee became the foremost Indian apologist of his day. Prior to 1865, Banerjee followed the lead of Duff and other missionaries in seeing Hinduism as nothing but superstition and idolatry that needed to be destroyed. However, his approach to apologetics eventually changed. He began to argue instead that Christianity was the fulfillment of Hinduism. He noted how sacrifice was the most important ritual in the earliest forms of Hinduism, and he showed from the Vedas, the Upanishads, and other Hindu writings that Prajapada, the Lord and supporter of creation, not only sacrificed himself to save humanity, but did so by taking on a mortal body. This, Banerjee argued, was actually a prefiguration of Jesus' incarnation and sacrifice on the cross. Beyond his work as an evangelist and apologist, Banerjee was a critically important figure in what's called the Bengal Renaissance, bringing modern ideas of scholarship and social justice to India and developing an approach to Christianity which honored Indian culture while remaining firmly anchored in the British evangelical tradition. He was a remarkable example of contextualization and of applying the biblical worldview to all areas of life. For Banerjee, this started in school, inspired by a teacher who taught students to seek wisdom and truth and to follow honest inquiry. Eventually, that search pointed Krishna Mohan Banerjee to love God with all of his mind, heart, soul, and strength, and his neighbors as himself. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
More wet on the way. Kevin Williams next.
Here is your family life weather forecast for this afternoon. Well, for cloudy skies, by and large, humid. Couple of showers around, thunder shower for some. High temperature 60s and low 70s. Some patchy fog and drizzle too. Tonight and tomorrow, rather cloudy, humid. Couple showers, some fog and drizzle around. Low temperatures tonight near 60, holding in the 60s to near 70 for a high tomorrow. Wednesday, clouds, some limited mixed sunshine, just a small shower chance across parts of Pennsylvania. High temperatures Wednesday will be near 70.
All right, Kevin Williams, with that update from the Weather Center, this is the Noon Report on Family Life. I'm your host, Bob Price. Lots going on this Monday afternoon, the 4th of October. The U.S. Supreme Court began its fall term today with several high-profile cases on the docket. One of the biggest of the year, the Dobbs case out of Mississippi, could spell the beginning of the end to Roe v. Wade. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee.
If it were overturned, it doesn't mean that abortion is illegal. All it means is that the states make the determination and not the federal government.
There's also a huge gun rights case before the high court this term and a death penalty decision that's looming large as well. A case out of the state of Maine this fall could have profound impact on the role of religion in the public square. The justices will decide whether denying scholarships to students who attend religious school amounts to discrimination. Cleanup crews are working hard to contain a massive oil spill along the coast of Southern California. It covers approximately 13 square miles of Pacific Ocean. Pockets of sludge continues to wash up along some of SoCal's most popular beaches.
The smell hits you, and there is just gunk everywhere.
A ruptured underwater pipeline 4 miles offshore caused more than 125,000 gallons of oil to spill into the Pacific. What a mess today. Butting heads on Capitol Hill.
Make no mistake, the progressives are in the driver's seat here. The moderates are in the passenger seat riding along as they drive us right off a fiscal cliff.
Florida Congressman Michael Waltz says far-left progressives have the Democratic Party in disarray today as two major spending bills remain in limbo due to in-party bickering.
Both of these bills need to pass. Both will not pass if people try to separate them.
New York City Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says progressives will not budge on social welfare spending. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says the standoff points to a lack of leadership from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
2020 Joe Biden is now officially dead and buried. Oh. The guy who ran against the progressives, ran to be a uniter in this country, and he went up to Capitol Hill and he capitulated to the progressives, the liberals in his party. And why should we be surprised? He couldn't stand up to the Taliban. How could we expect him to stand up to AOC? Okay.
As the stalemate continues, activists are getting bolder with their demands. Over the weekend, immigration activists followed moderate Democrat Kyrsten Sinema into a restroom in Arizona.
We knocked on doors for you to get you elected, and just how we got you elected, we can get you out of office if you don't support what you promised us.
The senator hounded for her refusal to attach social welfare spending to the infrastructure projects. Reporter Aisha Hansney says a lot is hanging in the balance here.
This is really incredible what's happening here on Capitol Hill. You've got this infrastructure bill that is really a rarity on the Hill because it has bipartisan support, but we really don't know what's going to happen to it now. It's kind of turned into the redheaded stepchild as we have the left really focusing on the social spending bill.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has set a deadline of October 31st for a vote on that gigantic $3.5 trillion Build Back Better social welfare program. Donald Trump believes all other GOP contenders would step aside should he choose to run for president again.
If former President Trump decides to run again, he believes most of his fellow Republicans will drop out of the field, clearing the path for his party's nomination. Trump telling Yahoo Finance that he doubts he'll get into a face-to-face showdown with rising GOP star Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, adding, quote, I'd beat him like I would beat everyone else. DeSantis, who faces re-election next year, says right now he is focused on his current job. I'm Rory O'Neill.
A new poll out today shows half of all the voters who supported Donald Trump in the last presidential election also support splitting up the country along ideological lines. 41% of President Biden's supporters like that idea as well, cleaving the country along political lines. The survey from the University of Virginia Center for Politics finds more Americans than ever before now support seceding from the Union, forming their own separate country. Well, William Shatner is going to space, real space. Captain James T. Kirk will be on the next Blue Origin rocket launch. It'll happen in West Texas at 90 years of age. The Star Trek legend will be the oldest person to fly in space. That launch is scheduled for October 12th. It's the second flight of Jeff Bezos' space company, which is transitioning into regular commercial flights. We're coming up on 25 past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome to another edition of Issues in Education. Mondays during the Noon Report, we spotlight the weighty issues impacting our public schools with the good Dr. Ralph Kerr at the Teaching and Learning Institute. Ralph, a whole lot to get to this week. We'll try to cover as much as we can, but it has been a busy week, and we'll jump right in with this vaccine mandate for school teachers in New York City. That is now in effect. If they haven't been vaccinated, they are suspended without pay. Do you think such an edict will eventually take root statewide in New York?
No, I don't think so. It was interesting to kind of watch it in New York City evolve, but I just don't think this is going to happen statewide. I think there's enough opposition to it that ultimately it just can't happen, I don't believe.
Yeah, we talked about teacher vaccinations and as well student vaccinations and whether or not this would be a reality. In California, it is. Governor Newsom has said that anyone 12 and up will not be allowed in-person learning unless they've been vaccinated once those vaccines become available. That could be as soon as November, December. So that's the reality in California, Ralph. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I'm appalled that that's what's happening, really. Last week, there were some reports that saying that the pandemic was going down, the number of cases. And I think that's what's going to happen. And to mandate something that's not even available for a while, I think is just carrying it way too far. I hope, even though generally what happens in California does come here, mm-hmm. I hope that won't be the case in New York and Pennsylvania.
Well, we read a story last week about the enrollment drop at SUNY schools, and it's quite substantial. This is the SUNY system starts deregistering students who are not vaccinated. Does one have to do with the other here, Ralph?
I don't think it does. When I looked into this, I found that the deregistering of the students because they're not vaccinated really has had very little impact on their reduction in enrollment. For instance, at Brockport, they're claiming that there are only four students that are unvaccinated, and SUNY Geneseo is claiming they have 100% of the students vaccinated, and a couple of the other schools have really low numbers as well. So I think it's another way to try to get everybody vaccinated, but I don't think you can say that's resulting in the less enrollment in SUNY schools.
Gotcha. Let's head to Pennsylvania next, Ralph. This legislation here would kind of give parents a front row seat into what's being taught at school, an effort to make schools post online. This is for public schools. All their course curriculum, everything that's being taught in school must be made available online. Do you support such a measure, Ralph? And what do you think is driving this?
Well, let me take the last question first. What's driving it is that parents are really getting involved in their schools, which I'm thrilled about. They're seeing things in the curriculum and in textbooks, and they're really taking it to the school boards, which is exactly what should be done. I am a little bit hesitant in terms of going too far, though, on what they are posting online. I have no problem with posting curriculum guides or the textbooks that are used. But I think if they get into requiring teachers to post their lesson plans, they may end up with some legal issues, and I think that might be going a little bit too far.
Yeah, good point. And then finally, the sub shortage. We're not talking about the subs at Subway here. This is the substitute teacher shortage, Ralph. It's pretty pronounced in both New York and Pennsylvania. How bad is it out there?
Well, it's really, really bad. In fact, both states are beginning to look at lessening up the requirements. The shortage is just dynamic at this point. Certainly anybody that's retired or has a teaching certificate is interested in getting back into education. I would encourage them to contact their district because there are openings everywhere.
Yeah, not just the school buses. It's the substitute teachers as well. They need a lot of help. Well, man, we've been a lot of places in just the past 5 minutes, Ralph. Solving the world's problems in 5 minutes or less. Dr. Ralph Kerr, you have so much information on your website, too, about public education and how Christians can get involved in their public schools. If folks want to do that, where can they go?
They can just simply go to yrun.org, yrun.org.
All right, thank you, Dr. Kerr. Issues in Education, the name of the program. It airs Mondays during the Noon Report or online anytime. Catch it at familylife.org.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A slow-moving area of low pressure will keep us in its soggy grip for the rest of the day and the night ahead. The result, cloud cover, some showers, a few rumbles, and some patchy fog and drizzle. As that system gradually moves away, our weather will gradually improve through midweek. For this afternoon, don't look for cloudy skies, by and large, humid. A couple of showers around, a thunder shower for some. High temperature, 60s and low 70s. Some patchy fog and drizzle, too. Tonight and tomorrow, rather cloudy, humid. A couple showers, some fog and drizzle around. Low temperatures tonight, near 60. Holding in the 60s to near 70 for a high tomorrow. Wednesday, clouds, some limited mixed sunshine. Just a small shower chance across parts of Pennsylvania. High temperatures Wednesday will be near 7.
All right, Kevin Williams at the Weather Center. Thank you. Finally, at noon today, the 40th annual Wine Glass Marathon went off without a hitch Sunday in New York's Southern Tier. Now, despite the rainy weather, and it was rainy, nearly 6,000 runners took part in that race from Bath to Corning. For local resident Sarah Lewis, it was her very first marathon.
I feel amazing. We finished. We're marathon runners now. What an awesome feeling.
Once a marathoner, always a marathoner. As they say, Lewis and her best friend Tammy Bouchard finished the 26.2-mile race together in a little under 4 hours.
It was a lot of mind over matter. A lot of it was a mental game.
The last 3 miles, it was the longest 5K I've ever done. But we, you know, all our training that we've done, all that hard work, I mean, we really put it to the test.
Yes, psychosomatics, mind over matter. There, both women ran the race in honor of loved ones lost. Bouchard ran for her late father, killed in a car crash, and her firefighter brother, who lost his life battling a blaze earlier this year.
When I hit that mental block, they helped push me through, and I actually ran past where my dad died on the highway.
The women ran 13 miles a day to train for this thing, the Wine Glass Marathon, and they plan to run it again, all 26.2 miles next year. And that's our world for Monday, the 4th of October, 10-4 on the calendar. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.